This podcast is from Christian Chapel in Tulsa, Oklahoma. For more information, visit us online at christianchapel.com.
Well, good morning. It is good to see you here. If you're a guest, we're especially glad you're joining us. I know we've got a lot of friends and family of some of our graduates, so thank you guys. It's good to see all of you. Before we get started, I want to introduce someone to you. If you've been around Christian Chapel a while, you probably did not recognize someone this morning, or you recognize that you did not recognize him, and now you're wondering who that was. That is Alex Haygood. Alex, if you'll stand up, say hi. Alex is our new summer intern. Alex, so many of you know we have a worship internship program that runs during the school year. During the summer, we have a more full pastoral ministry internship program. So our interns, including Ben and Titus and Blake, finished up their time, and they're going different places, and Alex is jumping in for the summer. We're excited to have you. Alex finished his sophomore year at ORU. He's from Kansas City, Missouri, and so you'll get a chance to meet him and talk with him this summer. He'll be serving with the worship team and then all the different kids, youth activities, camps. Pretty much whatever we do, Alex will be there. So we're excited to get to spend time with him. This morning, we are about halfway through a series of messages that we started right after Easter Sunday this year, and we've called it Don't Settle. And what we're doing is exploring how Jesus has come to bring us this just expansive, free experience of life. But we all face a temptation to settle for less than what he offers to us. And so the idea for this comes from John chapter 10, verse 10, where Jesus says, "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." So what we've been talking about is how we all face this temptation in life to settle for just a halfway experience of God's grace, a halfway experience of his power, for being better than we used to be, better than those around us, and just kind of settling in that space. What I want to talk to you about this morning is this temptation we face to settle for a life where we have a divided heart, where we follow Jesus partially or in some areas, and then in other areas we follow ourselves and kind of do what we want to do. Yogi Berra, I don't know if many of you are familiar with that name. If you're a baseball fan, you probably are. If you're a fan of ridiculous sayings, you probably are as well. But Yogi Berra was a Yankees catcher way back, amazing on the field, but honestly now he's probably more famous for some of the things he said called Yogiisms than he is for what he actually accomplished. One of Yogi Berra's famous statements was, "When you come to a fork in the road, take it." Which is one of those, and these are things with all of his sayings. And yeah, some of you are like, oh, yeah. See, and that's the thing with his statements of on the surface, they sound wise. And then when you dig a little deeper, it's like, that's actually ignorant and ridiculous. And yet, his approach to a fork in the road, just take it, is the approach many of us take in our faith. Jesus comes, and he tells us in John 10:10, because there are two paths for our life. There is a path defined by his presence, his leading, his guiding that leads to life to the full. And there is a path that the enemy will lead you on where he will steal and kill and destroy. So Jesus says, I've come to get you off of this path and get you onto this path. And the temptation some of us face is to say, yes, I want that path that's led by Jesus, except for certain areas where I want to lead myself. Right? And so eventually in life, you're going to get to this point where you have to choose between the two. You can't straddle that fence forever. I don't know, maybe you're have been a water skier or a snow skier. When you're first learning to water ski, the experience a lot of people have is they're sitting down, they're bobbing in the water, and they get up. And as the boat pulls them, almost every beginner skier has this experience where their skis start to go different directions. Right? Anybody ever had that? You right? And the people in the boat are laughing at you. And they're telling you, keep trying, mostly so they can see you keep doing this. But here's what we all know. When you're that skier, you can only go for a little bit with your legs going in opposite directions. Right? Now, if you're Pastor Cameron, you can go for a little while longer. Like, you know, maybe you're touching the shore on both sides and then just drop the rope and stand up. But for the rest of us, there comes a point where we're split too far and we go down. In Matthew chapter 25, Jesus tells a series of stories that are intended to prepare us for this idea of, hey, you have to make a choice every day, and the choices you make every day affect how you will live forever. And the kind of the underlying issue Jesus is addressing in Matthew 25 is he's trying to teach the disciples, I'm here with you now, but I'm going to go away, and then I'm going to return. And you're going to live in this land in between my first coming and my second coming. And as you live in that space, which is the space you and I live in today, as we live in this land in between the first coming of Christ and the second coming of Christ, we are experiencing his goodness, we're experiencing his power, we're experiencing his presence, and yet we will be tempted because of his absence, because we feel like maybe he's delayed or he's not coming back, to at some point decide, well, if he's not here, I'm just going to do what I want. And we'll try to navigate this divided heart, this divided life, but it won't work. And so what Jesus is teaching us, we're going to look at a portion of this, Matthew 25, verses 14 through 30, where he tells a story to basically help us understand, I've given you talents, I've given you abilities, I've given you gifts, and so now I want you to be faithful with them because I will return. And when I return, the life you have lived by the power of my Spirit can be congruent with the life you're going to continue to live when my new kingdom is established. So Matthew 25, he tells a story of a wealthy businessman, a landowner, who's going to go away on a long trip. Now, in this story, Jesus is the landowner, right? The landowner represents Jesus, and he calls his servants who represent you and me. And so the landowner calls his servants Land Rover for some reason the whole day. Land Rover calls his, the landowner calls his servants together. And it says that he gives each of them gifts according to their own ability. So to the first one, he gives 5 bags of gold. To the second one, he gives 2 bags of gold. And to the third one, he gives 1 bag of gold. And then he goes on his way. And in his absence, the servants are responsible for these resources he's given to them. And so the first servant who's been given the 5 bags, he puts them to work and he earns 5 more. The second servant who's been given 2 bags puts them to work and earns 2 more. And the last servant who's been given 1 bag goes and digs a hole in the ground, puts the gold in there, covers it up, and then goes along doing whatever he wants with his life. Well, the master eventually returns from his journey. And when he comes back, it is performance review time for the servants. And so the first and second servant come to him and they say, Master, look, we took what you gave us. And we increased it. We went from 5 to 10. We went from 2 to 4. And to both of them, Jesus says, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness. And so they're rewarded. They're celebrated. And then the third servant comes. And he, before he presents his bag to the master, he makes his excuses. I know you're a hard man, Master. I know that you require accountability for our actions. I know that you have a reputation at times of even harvesting in fields where you haven't planted them because somehow they've come into your possession. And so I live in this fear of you. So I took my bag and I buried it because I wanted to be sure I didn't lose it. And now that you're back, I have dug it up. And so here is the one bag that you originally gave to me. Now, what's really interesting to me is, again, Jesus tells this story. He's the master. We are the servants. And so I would expect Jesus to say to the servant, that's okay, buddy. We'll get them next time. You didn't quite do what I thought you would do. You didn't quite do what I wanted you to do. And yet the master's response to the servant is much more direct than that. He says, you wicked, lazy servant. You should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. Take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. See, the master he's not offended by the lack of results as much as he is by the complete lack of effort. Because this servant's refusal to engage in any process of putting these gifts to work, what it reveals is what he actually thinks about the master. And what he thinks about the master is, I don't want you telling me how to spend my life, spend my time, do my work, do my job. So I'm going to take what you gave me. I'm going to come over here and I'm going to bury it so that I do have it when you come back and you can't get me in trouble for that. But then I'm going to spend the rest of my life just doing whatever the heck I want. And when you show up, I'll pull it out and say, here you go, and kind of make some excuses and apologies and hope that you'll say, that's fine. Go ahead and do whatever you want. But the master comes back and he says, no. This was not motivated by fear. This was motivated by your wicked heart, by your lazy heart, by your desire to not live under my rule and my reign, to not live in a way that you're held accountable to me. And so you don't get to keep the gifts I've given to you. Instead, give them back to me and I'm going to allow you what you clearly desire. You can leave my presence. And so the servant goes off. Now, this morning, what I want to focus on is not that part, because that's a whole nother talk in itself, but I want to focus on his response to those first two servants. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share in your master's happiness. Now, again, we're talking about what can we do to make sure we're not living with a divided heart. Right, now, first, the recognition is everything we have in life is a gift from God. Everything I hold in my hand comes from him. None of these servants come with their own gold, with their own resources. They come empty-handed. God, the master, puts stuff in their hands. And so when we're trying to live with a heart fully devoted to the Lord, we're recognizing we come with nothing to offer him, nothing to bargain with, just empty hands. And he begins in his grace to pour his life into us, to pour his resources, his abilities, his talents into us. And then our response is to be faithful with every single thing he's given to us. The small things and the big things, because they're all God things. All right, so that first idea to avoid living with a divided heart, we have to be faithful in the small things. That's the one that for many of us, we're like, can I skip that part? Like, can we go straight to the big things? Because I don't really have time or the desire to work in obscurity. I don't really want to do the things that no one's going to see. I want to do the things that matter. I want to do the things that are important. And this is especially challenging for those of us who've grown up in an environment where we've been told, you're going to change the world, right? You are my little world changer. And I've talked with you before about the pressure that puts on a child, right? When you've grown up your whole life hearing from your parents, hearing from others, you're going to change the world. There's going to be Jesus, the Apostle Paul, Martin Luther, Abraham Lincoln, and you. Like, really? All they did was graduate high school. They didn't, no offense, girls, but you didn't walk on the moon. Okay, so it's just like, can we back off the pressure just a little bit? Let's celebrate this season, but let's also recognize we all go through a season of small things. Right? And not just once, but oftentimes in each new season of life, we go through a season of small things before we get to the big things. And it's because that's the way God has designed it for us. We need the season of the small things to prepare our hearts, to learn to be faithful, to learn to trust God in these little moments, so that when bigger responsibilities come, we're ready to serve. But for us, it feels like at times, if it's small, it doesn't matter. And because we feel that way, we don't pay attention to what is small. Now, it's Graduate Sunday, so how many of you either are currently a student or have once been a student? Okay, perfect, good. This might be the only time ever it's 100% illustration application. So for all of you, whether you dropped out of school after eighth grade or you have finished a doctoral degree, you've had the experience of sitting in a classroom with a teacher or professor telling you need to learn this while you sat there and thought, I don't actually need to learn this. All right, this is a waste of my time. I remember my freshman year of college, so I went off to college, graduated from a public high school where I felt like, man, they were just constantly telling me a bunch of stuff I didn't want to know. And so my response was always like, I'm going to go be a theology major. I don't need geometry. And I used that as often as I could. And I'm sure my teachers were glad when I graduated. But so I'm sitting in my freshman year just thankful that I'm finally in a space where I get to pick my classes that fit my major. And apparently I wasn't prepared enough for college because I didn't know before I could get into my theology classes, I had to take psychology and freshman comp and Western Civ and all of these other, just general ed type classes. So my freshman year, I finished freshman comp and some of those others, and I'm sitting in a class called Composition and Rhetoric. And I'm actually maturing to the point of understanding this will be useful to me long term. They're teaching me to write. They're teaching me to reason. They're teaching me to communicate. And if I'm going to be a theology major, I'm going to have to write a lot of papers. One day I'm going to have to stand in front of people and talk. So I should probably pay attention in this class. And so I was locked in. I was working hard until about halfway through the semester, my professor told me for the next 3 weeks, we're going to be doing poetry analysis. And I thought, nope, no, we're not. No, we're not. Get back to the other stuff, the important stuff. Like, I don't care about two roads that diverged into a wood. And do we take the one less path? I want to talk about the God who made the woods, because I'm a theology major and that's what matters, you know? And so, but I sat in there and I, you know, by this point had learned enough to know sometimes you just got to grind it out. And so I just did the work because she held the threat of a grade and I was a performance-oriented person. So she understood the dynamics and how they worked and I did too. So I did the work. Well, 3 years later, I'm sitting in my, what I thought were my important classes, finally. You know, and I'm sitting in this class on the wisdom literature and the poetry in the Old Testament. And wouldn't you know that as I'm writing papers in those classes, I'm leaning back on some of the things I learned in that little short 3-week session. And then just a couple months ago here at Christian Chapel, we spent all of Lent walking through Psalm 23, which is poetry. And in that process, I find myself remembering, I honestly can't remember my comp and rep professor's name. I can see her face, I can't remember it. Maybe that's because it's been 18 years. You know, like, you girls are the most depressing senior class I've ever had because you were born the year I graduated high school. And I knew one day this day would come, but my goodness. So I was thinking about that this morning. Why can't I remember my professor's name? Well, because it was 18 years ago. You know, but even though I can't remember it, those lessons she taught me continue to bear fruit today. And you've had that experience in your life. You have learned little things, and in your education, in your job, when you start, there's normally the process of the little things, of learning the small spaces, of learning the baseline skills. And if you don't learn those, you're going to get to the space where new responsibilities are placed on you, and you don't have the ability to do it because you weren't faithful in the small things. So what Jesus is teaching us, look, you got to be faithful in the small things. Trust that what I'm giving you to do now is going to bear fruit later. And don't disregard it just because it seems obscure. The other thing we learn about being faithful in the small things is that we can't fall into this comparison trap of looking at the people on our right or on our left as our excuse for either not being faithful or for just feeling like, well, they're not as stressed as I am. So that can go two ways. The guy who gets the one bag of gold, he can look at the guys with the two and the five and say, well, I didn't get as much as them, so I don't have any responsibility. And that's kind of what he does. He goes and buries his in the ground. And you and I can do that at times too. We look at our friends, we look at family members who have more success, who have more responsibility, and we think, well, yeah, if I was in their space, then I would take this seriously. But I'm not, so I'm just going to kind of dork around and do what I want. But that's not being faithful in the small things, which God is calling us to. The other side of that is when God has maybe given you a little more and you look to the person on your right or your left, you think, man, I wish I had their life. I wish I had the level of responsibility they have. I wish I could just clock in, clock out, go home, not worry about it. I wish no one knew my name, knew my number, knew where I live, never bothered me. I just want to be there. And God's response to all of us in all of these small things is, don't worry about what's in his hands. Don't worry about what's in her hands. Just be faithful with what is in your hands. And as you're faithful in the small things, this lesson Jesus teaches us will become the reality of your life. You're faithful with a few things. Now come, and I will put you in charge of many things. Now again, this is where we have to pay attention. The way we read this as middle, upper middle class Americans is typically to move from small things to big things means I have a more important job, I have more money, I have more power, I probably have a bigger house, bigger car, and I have more vacation, and life's going to get a little bit easier because I'm a little closer to the top of the pyramid. Right, but that is not at all what Jesus is teaching us. If you notice here, what is the reward for the servants who have worked hard? It's more work. Right? Hey, good job. You've been faithful with the little things. Come here. I got a really big job waiting for you. Like, what? Wait, where's my vacation? Where's my retirement? Where's my gold watch? I want a cruise. I want a beachside condo. I want to sit on, you know, like I made you 10 bags of gold. Can I get two of them to sit on for my throne? Like, just come on. Just give me some space here. And Jesus's response is, hey, you're faithful with a little. Great. Come on. Now let's be faithful with more. And the lesson he's teaching us is that a life of following Jesus is one of constant stewardship. You never graduate, you never retire from following Jesus. And so whether you see the things as big things or small things, there's always going to be things. And God's put them in your hands. He's put them in your heart. He's put those relationships around you. And he's asking you now to be faithful with them. And we never get the option of just saying, I think I'm good. I think I've done enough. I think I've achieved enough. I think I've climbed high enough, or maybe I've sunk low enough. I'm just good. I'm going to move on from here. See, the reason Jesus takes us from small things to big things is so that we will continually lean into his power, lean into his presence. His intention is not that we get to the point where we feel like, you know what, I got it from here. I've kind of mastered this marriage thing. I've mastered this parenting thing. I've mastered this work thing. And I know where I fit in my family, and I know where I fit in my friends. And now I think I'm just going to put it on cruise control for the rest of my life. When we find ourselves in those seasons, God's response is often to say, here's a valley or here's a mountain. But either way, you're going to learn to trust me. Either way, you're going to learn to rely on me. And so he gives us these bigger things, not so that we can sit up and look down on others and be so proud of ourselves, but God gives us bigger things so we can trust him in bigger ways. When I was in college, I had this great group of friends, and I've kept in touch with a couple of them over the years. And several of my buddies are doing what I do. They're married, they've got kids, and they're pastoring churches. And a couple years ago, before I had transitioned into this lead pastor role at Christian Chapel, a couple of them were a few years ahead of me. So they'd planted churches, or they had been selected to be senior pastors of different churches. And so we would talk on the phone, and they would just tell me about some of the opportunities they had as leaders of churches. And honestly, I would sit here when I was working as a youth pastor, co-pastor, and think, man, that's awesome. I hope I get that chance. I can't wait for that day. That sounds like so much fun. It sounds so exhilarating. And then we went through our process here, and that happened. And I became the lead pastor, and I called one of my buddies, Chris, who lives in Nebraska, and I was telling him about it. He'd kind of walked with me through this whole process. And I said, was just asking, what advice do you have for me? You know, just in these first couple months, what advice do you have? Because, man, I felt like here's where I am. I was faithful in the small things, and now God has given me a bigger thing. And I recognized this was a bigger thing that was beyond my natural abilities. And my friend Chris, he said, you just got to take time every day and remind yourself, you asked God for this. I said, what do you mean? He said, there are going to come times, the coming months and years, where it's going to be fun, it's going to be exhilarating, your heart's going to come alive. And then there are going to be times where you're tired, you're stressed, you're challenged, you are stretched beyond your ability, you are thrust into situations you got no interest in being a part of. And he said, in those moments, you're going to long for the days you were the youth pastor. But remember, you asked God for this. And so I thought about that and kind of said, thanks for the encouragement. Like, you're such a bad friend. Like, dude, I'm calling somebody else to get some encouragement now. But he and I have talked over the years, and we have those talks often of, man, this is not fun. Why did we ever pray for this? Why did we ever ask God for this? And the reason God gave it to us was precisely to bring us to that point. God's desire for my life is never that I would be self-sufficient. It's never that I would feel like I got all the answers, know all the people, have the solution for every problem. God's plan for my life is for me to be completely dependent on him for every single moment of my life. And the same is for you. And so when he gives you these big things, sometimes they may feel like they're going to crush you, but they won't. As you're faithful, God's Spirit will rise up inside of you. His wisdom will be made available to you, and he will lead you through on a path that leads to life. He will bring life to the full. So one of the things I love most about the stories that Jesus tells us is you can often look back into the Old Testament, and you can do character studies, you can read the historical accounts of Israel, and you can find examples that prove the points Jesus makes in the New Testament, right? And so when we're thinking of this idea, the life of David really exemplifies this idea of being faithful in the small things and being faithful in the big things. And ultimately what Jesus is teaching us, and what we'll see David's life proving to us in just a moment, is this idea that small things are big things, and big things are small things, because all things are God's things. And I know that might sound a little Dr. Seussian to you, but let's just take a moment and think about this, because it's rooted in the scriptures. We're going to see it in David's life. So small things are big things. Right? Now our common response to small things is it's little and it doesn't matter. But you know, if you've lived very long, that you can look back on the course of your life, and with the benefit of hindsight, the wisdom of age, you can see that what you thought were very small and insignificant decisions turned into massively important moments of your life. So you were a sophomore in college, and they scheduled you for a 7:50 a.m. class. And you, clearly recognize this is not going to work for me. And so out of a purely selfish desire to sleep more, you change to a 9 a.m., a 10 a.m. class. And the first day you walk into that class, it was as if heaven itself shone the light down on that girl. Right? And your small little decision of I want to sleep more turns into the space God uses to show you your spouse. I've had this experience before. If somebody gives me a book, and man, I get books all the time, and I read a lot of them, but sometimes I open it and God uses that book. I remember several years ago reading a book by Miroslav Volf called Free of Charge. It was about forgiveness. And somebody had given that to me and I started to read it. And God went to work in my heart in a way that brought healing to wounds that were 15 years old, but just as fresh then as they were the day they occurred. I never knew that when I'm just flipping the pages of a book. To me, it's just another one of the dozens that I'm going to read that year. And yet, that small decision has lifelong consequences. And if you have time in your home groups tonight, you can have these conversations with each other of what were those little things that you thought were so inconsequential, but they changed the trajectory of your life. See, here's the thing. When we believe God is over all, he's above all, he's in all, then it means every moment drips with eternal significance. And there's no such thing as a small thing when God is at work in all of it. It also means that big things are small things. You've probably had this experience as well, where you're in a season of life and you think, this is the most important thing I'm ever going to do. And 3 years later, you look back and think, that did not matter at all. Right? Or you've been over here and you thought nothing is ever going to be as difficult as this moment. When I was a youth pastor, I remember talking to junior hires and they would just sometimes come in and be like, I can't believe my teacher's making me write a 5-page paper. 5 pages. You can't fill 5 pages with anything. You know, it's like, hey, good luck. Like, follow Stephanie's route. You're going to write a 500-page paper someday. 5 pages is what you do before you've had your first cup of coffee. You know, you have this moment. Some of us, we've been in spaces and we've thought, this is the worst pain I'm ever going to experience in life. Nothing can hurt me as bad as I've been hurt right here. And then sadly for some of us, we find us in a new season. We think that was nothing compared to this. Or sometimes we're over here and it's a more enjoyable. Man, life can never get better than this moment. I have reached the summit. This is as good as it gets. Marriage is good. Kids are good. Work is good. And decades later, you look back and you're experiencing a sweetness in your relationship, a nearness with the Lord. And you think that was good, but this is better. See, that yesterday's big things are tomorrow's small things. God is always using us. He's always working through us. He's always preparing us for the next thing. And those things are true because all things are God's things. And this is what we believe as followers of Jesus. That Jesus did not come to establish a religious side of our life and a whatever we want to do side of our life. But his salvation, his kingdom, his presence is all consuming. And his arrival here means that he touches everything and everyone. So every relationship that I have, every opportunity that I'm given, every point of work and pleasure, every point of leisure, every hobby, all of these are part of God's redemptive plan in my life and in the world. And so we never get to coast. We never get to not take things seriously because God is at work in every moment in every relationship. Again, you see this played out in David's life. So last week, I gave you some homework. This week, I'm going to give you a little bit more. If you'll read beginning in 1 Samuel 15 through 2 Samuel 24. So this is going to take you a little bit longer this week than those stories from last week. But if you'll take some time and read this, and read it with that thought in the back of your mind of small things are big things are small things, because all things are God's things. And as you read the story of David, I believe God will speak to you not only about how that was true for him, but how it's true for you as well. So David's life, he becomes Israel's greatest king. But before that, if you back up, you find David as the youngest son in a family with a lot of brothers. His brothers are doing the important things. They're helping run the family business. They're off fighting the war. And David is sent out with the sheep in the pasture. And it seems like a small thing. It seems like an insignificant thing. But as a shepherd, David is learning to care for those who follow him. He's learning to watch out for the weak and the injured. He's learning to lead them on the right paths. He has all of this time to spend time with the Lord, to compose psalms, to do all of these types of things. And what seemed like a small thing of just take care of the sheep was actually a big thing because as a shepherd, David was actually learning how to become a king. And so David, as a shepherd, there are times where his flock is attacked. And he tells stories of times when a lion or a bear attacked the flock. And he says, they would come and they would carry off a sheep and I would chase after them. And I would strike them and I would rescue the sheep from their mouths. And then when the lion or the bear turned on me, I would seize them by the hair and kill them. Now, I don't know about you, but if I did that, that would be a very big deal. Right, I promise you, you would hear that story every Sunday. This scripture reminds me of the time I killed a bear with my hands. Right, like I would tie it in. I'd be doing your weddings, your baby dedications. I'd tell you about the time I killed a lion with my hands, and that's a massive deal. I mean, I would venture to say none of us in here have ever killed a lion or a bear with our bare hands. If so, please see me afterwards because I really want to hear that story. Okay, but so it seems like this massive deal, and it is a massive deal until the day David finds himself standing before Goliath. And when he stands before this championship fighter, suddenly the lion and the bear, yesterday's big things are today's small things. And so he stands before Goliath and he kills him. And it's this great big moment. It is a national moment, and David's part of it. Until he's appointed as one of the leaders of the army. And then he's led into the season where he no longer faces one giant on his own, but he's responsible for facing this entire enemy and for the lives of all of these men behind him. And you've got to think there were times that David longed for, I just wish it was a day it was just me and Goliath again. I just wish I was just responsible for myself and not all these men. But even in that big space, he begins to rise up and he experiences success. And then King Saul, his boss, becomes jealous of David and begins to try to kill him. And so David has to leave his friends. He has to leave his family. And he spends years hiding in the wilderness, living in caves, surrounded by a group of outlaws. And in that space, you've got to think there are times David longed to just go back to the small things of leading the army. It was so much easier then. And yet God is teaching him in this new big thing about what he's going to do. And so David is faithful. He obeys the Lord. He stewards what God has put in his hands in this season. And eventually Saul dies and David is anointed as the next king of Israel. And the only thing more stressful than being hunted by a king is becoming the king. And suddenly the thing that used to be huge of running for your life, now he's thinking, man, those days don't look so bad anymore. Now I've got the weight of an entire nation pressing down on me. But David stewards it well. He fights Israel's enemies. He teaches the people to follow the Lord. He builds up the capital. He's doing all these things. And towards the end of his life, the season comes when the kings lead their armies off to war. And David decides, I've done that enough. It's just a small thing. I'll send my men and let them do it. And I'll stay here at the palace. And while he's on the roof of his palace, he looks down. And he sees a woman taking a bath. And he thinks, I'm the king. I can do what I want. This is not a big deal. And so he calls for her. He finds out that she's married. But again, this is a small thing for David. He's the king. He's the man in Israel. He's the Lord's anointed. And this is what kings do. So he has her brought to the palace and he sleeps with her and she becomes pregnant. And there's a whole story there that you'll read as you're reading through the story of David. But what happens to David at the end of his life is what he thought was a small thing turned out to be a very big thing. See, for David's whole life, he had been a man after God's own heart, fully devoted to him, to his purposes, to his plans. And as he was faithful in the small things, God was continually leading him into bigger things. And those bigger things were helping him rely on the Lord. And then he got to the end of his life and he decided, I've got it from here. I can do it on my own. I no longer need to follow the army. I don't need to lead the army out into battle. Someone else can do that. I'll just stay here in my space where I know how things work. And he begins to give in to this temptation, and in doing so, he comes face to face with the greatest enemy he's ever known, the evil that resides in his own heart. And as he gives in to that temptation, again, he finds himself in this space, and you can read in Psalm 51 his response when he's confronted with his sin. And it's one of the most beautiful descriptions of repentance that we have in the scriptures. Of David crying out, God, it's against you and you only that I've sinned. It's his recognition that the biggest thing is that I've allowed my heart to become divided. I've allowed myself to live in a space where I'm admired, I'm looked up to, and yet on the inside, I'm beginning to give in to these small things. And eventually that small thing grows to the point that it overshadows all of the other things. And so what is David's response? When you and I find ourselves in that situation, what do we do? When we're confronted with the reality that we have a divided life, we have a divided heart, what is our response? It's the same of David. It's to believe that the same power that sustained him when he was a shepherd, the same power that killed the lion and the bear, the same power that gave him courage to face Goliath, to lead the army, to rule as king, was the same power that was now going to go to work in his heart to defeat his greatest enemy within. And that's what God does for us. And so for you and I, we live in this space of small things are big things and big things are small things because all things are God's things. And wherever you find yourself this morning, either feeling like you've got something little in your hands, feeling like there's something massive on your shoulders, or maybe just feeling like I've ruined it all, and I'm just sitting over here in the ashes wondering if God will ever put anything in my hands again. But the clear teaching of Scripture is all things are God's things. In your brokenness, he doesn't turn his back on you. In your sin, he doesn't walk away from you. In your success, he's not particularly impressed by you. But he's the God who's over all, the God who's above all, the God in whom all things have been made and in whom all things hold together. And his word is coming to our lives this morning declaring, everything in your life belongs to me. So be faithful. Work that job. Love that spouse. Take care of those kids. Earn those grades. Walk through the next door that I'm opening before you. Keep doing the last thing that I revealed to you. Just be faithful. And when you feel as if your faith is faltering, ask for grace. Ask for help. Ask for my Spirit, and I will pour it out in abundance to you. The ushers are going to come in just a moment and serve us communion. As they do, it's a reminder to us that all we need, Christ has provided. That in every way we lack, he is sufficient. And so I don't know where your heart is this morning. I don't know what you're dealing with. I don't know if you feel like you have a little or a lot on your plate. But I know the Spirit of Christ is here to bring you into new life and to make you able to be faithful in this season and in this moment. If you'll bow your heads, I want to pray with you, then the ushers will come and serve us. God, we thank you that you love us enough not only to save us, but to bring purpose and meaning to our lives. Thank you, Lord, that it is your presence and your power that makes our ordinary and mundane moments drip with eternal significance. Jesus, I ask that in these moments you would assure each person in this room that you see them and you know them, that you love them and have a plan for them. I ask, Lord, as they hold the bread and the cup in their hands, that it would be a reminder that all they need, you have provided. Jesus, come and speak to us about the life you have opened for each one of us. In your name we pray. Amen. The ushers are going to come and serve us. After we've all been served, I'll come back and we'll receive communion together.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Christian Chapel. For more information, visit us online at christianchapel.com.